Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome in. Time for another show, Jay Talking Our Way Around the Toronto Blue Jays Organization. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler with the Lansing Lugnuts. We've got some things to discuss this week. With my Lugnuts, Griffin Conine has landed. 50-game suspension is now over. And so game number 51, he was playing for Lansing, an RBI single immediately. And then in his second game, which occurred just yesterday as we're recording this show, about two doubles and two homers. Everything hit to the opposite field. So I'll discuss Griffin Conine with Adam Jackson, who calls the Lugnuts games with me. Meanwhile, Forrest Wall has been simply splendid as a member of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. He's riding an 11-game hitting streak. He's been top-notch. And there are some other things to talk about with New Hampshire, like, for example, Riley Adams, who might have been crossed off as folks looked at his season last year with Dunedin. This year, his second year, has been a lot better for Riley. So we'll be talking about Riley Adams and about Forrest Wall with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. With the AAA Buffalo Bisons, they opened up this week. You go back a full week ago, and it was Buffalo smoking the baseball. Alan Hansen, a two-homer game, drove in six, and they scored 15 runs, a 15-8 rout. And so we'll catch up with Pat Molicaro with the Buffalo Bisons and talk about the latest goings-on with the Herd. And then with the A-advanced Dunedin Blue Jays, Logan Wormuth is playing very well, speaking of Riley Adams. I think that we can group him and Wormuth into the same category as high Blue Jays draft choices in 2018, who after last year, I think it's easy to look at their performances and say, uh-oh, things are going in the wrong direction. Things are going in a much better direction for both of those players right now. Adams has earned that promotion up to Double-A. Because he moved that promotion up to Double-A, that allowed Alejandro Kirk to get promoted up to A-advanced, and Kirk is smashing the baseball with Dunedin. And there's Logan Wormuth, who's coming off a stay on the injured list. Since coming back off the injured list, I believe he is now about four or five multi-hit games. Yesterday, Wormuth homered in his first at-bat. He doubled in his second at-bat. He tripled in his third at-bat. Now, he did end up shy of the cycle, but hey, 3 for 5 gets it done, and the rest of his teammates were hammering the baseball as well. The Dunedin Blue Jays are playing very good ball. We've talked about the challenges that they have faced playing away from their ballpark as Dunedin Stadium is undergoing renovation, and yet they continue to excel. Whether you want to credit the pitching, Nick Allgaier, another strong performance, Maximo Castillo and Joey Murray, and right on down the line. Yesterday it was Justin Dillon with 5 scoreless innings, followed up by Mike Ellenbest, who's been good out of the bullpen. Emerson Jimenez allowed 3 unearned runs, but there's Brad Wilson, another all-star and a player who skipped over Lansing. And Wilson fired a hitless scoreless inning. And then, as far as the offense goes, don't let Wormuth's 3-hit performance overshadow another 3-hit performance. Cal Stevenson opened up the year like gangbusters. Opening day, if you recall, he homered. Now, since then, he'd gone into a tailspin. He's lifted himself back out of that slump. Stevenson went 3 for 5 yesterday with another triple, an RBI, and his batting average is up to .263. Meanwhile, Kevin Bakuni is also hitting the ball much better recently, a single, a double, 2 runs batted in yesterday. His batting average is up to .268. So those DJ's bats, if you cross them off earlier in the season, they're swinging the bat much better right now. Roberto Obeso, perhaps this year's Rodrigo Orozco. We'll see how he does, but Obeso, just like Orozco, seems to be playing better with Dunedin than he was in Lansing. He's batting .263 right now. We'll keep our eyes on him. And how about Ronnie Brito? Brito was acquired from the L.A. Dodgers in the Russell Martin deal. And he spent the start of the season in extended spring training, and he's opened things up. He's now with Dunedin. He skipped over Lansing, and yesterday a single, a double. He's hitting .500 in the early going. He's a top prospect that we should keep our eyes on. Let me bring in Adam Jackson, though, with my Lansing Lugnuts, and let's talk about the Lugnuts. And Adam, let's begin with Griffin Conine. Conine taken last year in the second round out of Duke University. 2 games into Lansing. How about already? He's got, 5 base hits. He's knocked in 4 runs. What have you seen out of him?
Seen a really nice swing to both sides of the field, Jesse, specifically going the opposite way. He had 2 home runs last night that were both hit to left field. He's a left-handed bat, different from his dad, who, of course, was a right-handed batter for mostly the Marlins. But after he gets his first hit in his opening debut a couple of nights ago and his first RBI, You followed that up last night with a couple of home runs to the opposite field and then a couple of doubles. So have really seen the opposite field power from him through the first couple of games. And you can tell, you and I watched both games and can see the power in his swing. He's got that open stance, waggles the bat behind his head, just looks like a power hitter. And you can see the strength down low for him. So through two games, although Dayton isn't great, they're in last place in the Midwest League. It was fun to see him come up from extended spring training and just take off as a top prospect you would expect them to be able to do, and he did that.
Well, those home runs yesterday, following on the heels of the double, we've got an interview that you had with Griffin Conine that we'll play later on in the show. What did you think of your first conversations with him, your first impressions of him as a guy?
Well, Jesse, obviously the first thing, the elephant in the room, was he was coming off a 50-game suspension. He tested positive for Ritalinic acid last year, found out in November, and we had to talk a little bit about that. And he said, you know what, it was the worst phone call that I had ever gotten. But if you remember correctly, when he found out last November, he owned up to it on Twitter. He apologized. He didn't make excuses. He made a mistake. He admitted that, and he said that he used that as motivation in extended spring training. Every time throughout the 50-game band when he was down in Dunedin getting ready for that moment to come up with Lansing, he said it was driving him during workouts, knowing that he had made a mistake and that's why he wasn't playing in games. He was down at extended spring training. So he said, you know, I made a mistake and got to move forward and just know that I learned something from that. I've grown from that. And he said he really got support from his family members, close friends. So I was really impressed with his maturity. A guy that age, 21 years old, makes a mistake like that, trying to follow in the footsteps of his dad, obviously, who had a great major league career. So was really impressed with the way that he handled himself and how excited he was to be in Lansing and get the opportunity to play with the Lugnuts beginning with game 51 after that suspension.
He wasn't the only power hitter who was smashing the baseball yesterday. The other guy who was coming up with the big swings was Ryan Gold. What have you seen from Gold as of late?
He's just hitting the ball really hard. When he comes up, you feel like good things are going to happen. I believe he's tied for first in the Lansing Lugnuts with 11 doubles now. He had that home run. He went the opposite way out to left center field yesterday. So the two left-handers getting it done. But I really like the way that Gold is swinging at pitches in the strike zone. And he's showcasing a confidence that we didn't see from him at the beginning of the year. And we've seen it from different players throughout the Lugnut lineup. But Ryan just looks locked in right now. We mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Once Alejandro Kirk got promoted, that they were excited to see what Gold could potentially do behind the plate. He's taken a lot of reps at the catching position, but specifically at the plate. He's swinging at a lot of pitches in the zone, and 90% of the time it seems like he is hitting the ball hard somewhere, whether it's up a gap, whether it may be at one of the defenders. He's putting good, solid contact, and he's had great at-bats against Dayton. He had the Golden Cycle and Grand Slam here in Lansing back in April, and then the second opportunity to play Dayton, he gets his second home run last night. So really have liked his approach and the way he's swinging at the plate.
Another key for the Lugnuts as of late has been the pitching. Specifically, let's look at the starting pitching. We saw Troy Watson yesterday, five innings, one hit, zero earned runs. Before that, Josh Winkowski, another gem. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts. Troy Miller's been very good. Josh Hyatt turned in another gem yesterday. What have you seen from the Lugnut starters?
Well, this has been the inconsistency for Lansing. They've had good hitters. Some have gone down to the IL or injuries. Others have been promoted. But the pitching has been up and down outside of Josh Winkowski. They started the year with Joey Murray. He was the Midwest League leader in strikeouts. But outside of those two, it's been a roller coaster, and the pitching, it's starting to come on late, specifically, as you mentioned. You still go with Josh Winkowski, who was excellent the other night. They seem to be hitting their strike zones and pitching with confidence. I mean, Josh Hyatt, a guy that in his last three outings, he's gone 12 innings pitched, allowed just 5 hits, 3 earned runs with 16 strikeouts to just 3 walks. So it seems like they're kind of feeding off one another, and they're starting to find that confidence. And I think that's the last piece of the puzzle for these Lugnuts. I mean, they've been solid defensively this year. They've shown spurts at time where their offense can go off, specifically at home where their numbers are elevated. But if they start to get the starting pitching, we know about the back end bullpen of Cree Finfrock and Jackson Reese, Sean Rakowski have been pretty good in the back end. If their starting pitching starts to become more consistent, you're going to see them start to win a lot more games. And specifically, as we head towards the second half in the next few weeks, this team certainly could take off.
At Adam Jaksa on Twitter, J-A-K-S-A, he joins me calling the Lugnuts games. Adam, thank you very much.
You got it, Jesse. Thank you.
All right. And now from Adam, let's go up the ladder. Let me bring in Jim Tarabokia from the Dunedin Blue Jays. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jesse. How are you?
I'm good. Let's talk about your DJs. For starters, what a great offensive performance yesterday.
Yeah, and especially hitting with runners in scoring position. That's been the thing here the last couple of weeks that's really stuck out. I put a good little note, stat in the game notes today that the Blue Jays have registered, the DJs, a .385 batting average with runners in scoring position in their last 14 games. That might be the highest batting average in that situation in the last 3 years. I have to double check on that, that they peaked anyway. So I think that's been the real key. Cesar Martin, our manager, has certainly talked about how well this team has hit in opportune situations, and it's really come through at a big time. And it's been the standout of statistic offensively for this team.
That's awesome to hear. And let me spotlight a couple of players. First, Logan Warmoth specifically has stood out, and not just the near cycle yesterday. He's put together a slew of multi-hit games recently. What have you seen?
Yeah, I've seen that he's healthy. He's more aggressive. He's not trying to overswing. He's not getting fooled by a changeup or a breaking ball. I think the game for him has certainly slowed down a lot. I think you see it in the field. I think you certainly see it at the plate. I think, you know, at this level, I think when guys when the game slows down for them, that's when they're most successful. And I think it goes for any level of professional baseball, but when they're able to slow the game down and kind of let it come to them like Logan has, then you're going to have success, and that's the thing that really sticks out to me the most.
Another player has just been playing sensationally this month. Cal Stevenson hitting .319 in May. The on-base percentage is .396. The OPS is .854. More walks than strikeouts. How about Cal recently?
Yeah, and I think, you know, with Cal, everything seems, as of late, seems to be getting hit hard, and it's falling right now for him. You combine that with his speed, the inside the park home run a couple of weeks ago, and you're going to see a guy have a lot of success in Cal Stevenson. I mean, it also helps, too, that he's gotten used to the pitching here in this league. He's feeling a lot more comfortable at the plate, and he's really, really caught on quick. And we're starting to see why he had so much success last year at the rookie levels. I don't think it's talked about enough in this system how seasoned he is as a college player that came out of the draft last year.
And let me bring up another guy who came out of the draft last year, a college guy. Hey, Christopher Beck seems to be playing very well for you.
Oh, well, you know, and then you throw in Alejandro Kirk, and we've got two catchers.
Yes.
One who is an excellent defender in Christopher Beck, and then another catcher who can just flat out hit. And you know that, in Alejandro Kirk. So we've got a pretty good catching combination. I think with Beck coming on offensively, we may see him now get more opportunities to hit as DH here going forward. But, you know, I think about where Dunedin was the last year with catching with Riley Adams and Alberto Mineo. It's sort of the same situation. One guy really hit last year, or had the potential to hit last year, in Riley Adams. Certainly Alberto Mineo, I think, turned some heads with how he hit last year, but also with how he played defense and how he was working with pitchers. And then we have kind of the same thing this year. One guy in Kirk who can absolutely hit. Doesn't take anything away from Beck and his bat, but he works with pitchers and is a very good defender as well. So it's sort of mirroring the catcher spot anyway from what it was last year.
I've got good news for you, too. You've got Gabriel Moreno.
Oh, good. I
and
like
Ryan
news.
Gold. Yeah. There's more catching depth coming up the ladder to you when those guys are gone, too.
Well, hey, and I think that says something about the organization and building the athletes up the middle. You think about just everything involved with catching the last couple of years, the players who've come up, the coordinators, and also really the one bright spot in all of that, or the brightest spot anyway, Johnny Schneider, who was our manager in 2017, now a major league coach helping out with the catcher's development at the major league level. So that's certainly been a very positive for the entire Toronto organization here in the last few years.
Fun talking to you, Jim, about how things are continuing to go, how this team is continuing to excel. Really liked when I said, hey, talk about whatever is on your mind, and you mentioned the schedule. And then Pat Mollicaro coming in next after you saying he couldn't imagine going through that same schedule that you're going through. And yet the team continues, whether it's the double headers that you've had to deal with or whether it's the road trips or whatever the case may be, the team continues to excel.
Well, you know what? Pat needs to pull up his bootstraps and get grinding there. No, I kid, of course. He's right. And I think that says a lot. And I talked to Cesar about this. It really says a lot to me about this team's character. When you look at it, this is a league that doesn't have as many teams as other leagues. So obviously at times you're going to cancel each other out with wins and losses. But this team right now, I think since 2015, is 12 games over 500. And they're really beating up on teams, and they're doing it right now. Actually, I'm glad you brought up that grind, because that's another note I had put today in the game notes. We had a league-wide off day on Monday. And we are playing the fourth of 17 contests, heading straight into the All-Star break. And 10 of those games are going to be on the road. So I think that the best thing that really helps this team, and it reflects on the coaching staff, is the ability to tell these guys take one game at a time and slow everything down. I mentioned with Warmoth earlier, it's the same thing here with coaches as well, and telling all their players they slow the game down, and it equates to wins. And I think that's exactly what we're doing. So I'm impressed with what we have here, and to be able to go through this grind of, last week, four games in 2 days, it's not easy. And to be able to do that, one at home, home, quote unquote, at Jack Russell, but and then the other in St. Lucie, it's not an easy thing to do. That's a long trip too. It's not an easy thing to do. And I'm really proud to be associated with these guys every day. I mean, we've no matter who comes and goes, it's always it always feels like the same. And that's when you're winning, that's a great thing in the game of baseball. And that says a lot about our coaching staff, the ability to get these guys into a routine and get them familiar with the everyday grind of this league. So that's a heck of a job by this coaching staff thus far.
Do you have a favorite road trip to go on? Do you have a favorite road stadium to visit and play at?
Good question. I think, I like Clearwater because their head food service lady, Erin, always gives me the extra food. So I like that. And it's just a gorgeous place. I think what else? So I like Clearwater. Lakeland's pretty easy to get to. I really don't. And I get a chance to go to all these ballparks that are spring training facilities. So they're pretty much top notch, and I get to kind of see and walk around. And, I'm familiar with all the people who don't work in the press box, the clubhouse men and women. Dom, who's our clubhouse visiting clubby in Clearwater. I mean, he's one of my favorites. So I don't really have a favorite park. I'm just happy to get a chance to be in the league and see these different parks on a daily basis.
Jim Tarabocchia, voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays, the first place squad in the Florida State League North Division. Jim, thank you very much.
Hey, and Jesse, by the way, I'm glad you're safe from the tornadoes in Dayton that unfortunately hit that area. I'm glad everything is good to go with you, the Lugnuts, and the Dragons as well. And I hope everybody can clean up quickly and swiftly, and that everybody's safe. And I'm glad to hear that you're safe as well.
Hey, Jim, I really appreciate that. We drove through the devastation on our way through Dayton, 75 South, and it was terrible to watch. We came in the next day after all of the tornadic destruction the night before. And so everyone that I met at Fifth Third Field, I asked them how they were affected. I found people who said that they were unharmed, and I found people who said they had no more homes or that their families no longer had homes. Let me go up to the AAA level. Let me bring in Pat Malacaro, the voice of the herd, the AAA Buffalo Bisons. Pat, how are you doing this week?
Things are good here, Jesse. We are just in Rochester, New York for the second time in as many weeks. Weird quirk in the schedule that Buffalo didn't see the team closest to them until late May, and now we're making up for lost time with Rochester. So getting set for the first of a three-game weekend series.
Well, let's talk about what's going on with Buffalo. And I think that the first place to start in looking over your Buffalo Bisons, let's go all the way back to last week. I believe it was a full week ago that Alan Hansen hit two homers, drove in six, and he scored 15 runs.
Yeah, and it was the first time this season a Bison hitter had hit two home runs in a game. The ball carries better at Lehigh Valley this year than we have ever seen. Part of it is the new baseballs, which we've discussed in the past, but part of it is just the weather patterns there this year. And now neither home run was a cheap home run for Alan Hansen, but the ball just carries better there this year, especially to right field. And for Hansen, the switch hitter, he was able to pull the ball to right, and things worked well for him. The Bison are not a home run team. They now have 41 on the season, 8 in the road trip that was between Rochester and Lehigh Valley last week. So that was, you know, 8 home runs, and coming into it, the team had 31. So that's a big chunk of home runs in a short amount of time. This team has gotten more home run hitters, especially adding someone like Billy McKinney recently. Oscar Hernandez has a couple. Even Socrates Brito has swung the bat well. He's a lot stronger and a bigger guy than I maybe expected, even knowing some of the vitals on him coming into it. So the Bisons have more home run hitters now than they had before, but still they're not a home run team, but they're getting some of those contributions.
You have a number of players right now on your team who at one point or another spent time with the Toronto Blue Jays, especially at the start of the year. Are there guys you're saying and watching them and how they're performing, whether Brito, whether McKinney, whether onward, where you're saying this guy is putting himself on the right track to return to the major leagues?
Yeah, I think Teoscar Hernandez is doing that, to be honest. It was a surprise at the start of last year, maybe. Not a surprise, but you understood the numbers game, but he definitely belonged in the big leagues at the start of 18, and it was no surprise when he did not come back down after a short time in Buffalo. This year, struggling a little bit, but you can tell if he's in center field, it's a spot that was not open for him for the longest time in Toronto, but now that Blue Jays don't really have a true center fielder in their everyday lineup, it's a spot that Teoscar could maybe move back into in a short order. If he could just start swinging the bat the way we've seen him hit in this league before and even at the big league level. So if you're talking about a guy that's probably maybe the closest, that would be the person for me. And hopefully we'll be seeing a guy like Bo Bichette back very soon, who probably was on the fast track, especially with the way that some of the young players are getting playing time in the big leagues this year, that would probably see time sooner rather than later.
How do you feel when you see Jacob Wagas back make his major league debut?
It was awesome. Just honestly, 2 hours before he found out-ish, I'm gonna put a rough timeline on it. He and I did a pregame conversation because we were in Lehigh, partly because it was the franchise, the organization that took a chance on him originally, and it was acquired from Lehigh Valley last year. But also, just because he's been throwing well for the Bisons. And he was perfectly blunt and honest and said, you know, signing as a minor league free agent after playing in college, probably not supposed to be here in AAA. And then for a couple hours later for him to go up to the big leagues and first, you know, being on a taxi squad, not knowing if he'd be activated, and then was a couple hours later that Sunday. It was pretty awesome. You know, unfortunate that he's suffering from a little bit of a shoulder strain right now, but I'm sure it's something he'll bounce back from quickly. And it's always, you always root for the guys on your team, especially But even more so, a guy like Waguespack, who he's not a top-round pick. He hasn't had a lot handed to him in the past. He's had to earn it and work for it. And for him to go to the big leagues, I think, is a pretty cool moment.
Lastly, I was wondering about Zach Jackson. He was a third-round draft choice of the Toronto Blue Jays. I saw him in Lansing. He's moved his way up the ladder. We haven't really dedicated too much time in talking about him as a future major league reliever for the Toronto Blue Jays. But how are you watching him develop recently?
Well, I think you're seeing out of him and out of a lot of the players that are on this team this year, AAA is a different level. It's a different beast. And to go from AA to AAA, you've got a lot more veteran experience, a lot more selection in terms of what guys are going to swing at the plate at this level and taking it to the big league. So I think it's been an adjustment for Zach to some extent this year because he's had to throw more strikes. And with that comes more hits given up and more runs given up. But you can see that he's starting to trust this stuff a lot more. He's going out there with a plan and just letting it fly at times, just not worrying about, you know, maybe what he may have seen in the past or what some of the reports may have been on guys, just going out and throwing, because we've seen his stuff. You've seen it before. The guys in AA have seen it. It's good. It'll play. It's just a matter of trusting it and knowing that you're going to have to throw some strikes to get guys out, and that's what he has started to do, and you're seeing the results really start to come with it as well.
All right. Pat Malacaro, voice of the AAA Buffalo Bisons, on the road coming to us from Rochester. Pat, thank you very much.
Yeah, glad to talk to you, Jesse, and we'll catch up next Friday.
All right, in 7 days. And from Pat down to AA, let me bring in the Zick. Tyler Zickler, how are you coming to us from Altoona, Pennsylvania?
Jesse, I'm doing fantastic. Happy Friday, happy around the nest. And here I am in what is likely the closest to a big league perspective in a visiting broadcasting booth than anywhere in the Eastern League here at People's Natural Gas Field in Curve, PA. So a fine day.
Have you seen the famous curve of the railroad tracks?
You know, shamefully, I have not. I pride myself on taking advantage of all the free time on the road to be able to check out the various sights, sounds, and smells of all these other Eastern League cities outside of Manchester, New Hampshire. But the Horseshoe Curve is one of those few landmarks that I have yet to check out. And, of course, as you might know, we only come to Altoona once every season because the Western Division clubs only get one visit and one visit, if you will, coming our way and going out that way each season. So try to pack it all into 3 days, but maybe tomorrow with the Jesse Goldberg Strasburg recommendation, I check out the Horseshoe Curve.
I love it. Wish Garrett Mansfield my best too. Because you brought up the smells, are there cities in the Eastern League that come with specific smells?
For me personally, Binghamton, New York, not the city itself, but I go to one sandwich shop that always smells great and drew me in the first time back in 2017, my first season in the league. Love going to Trenton for many respects, although the ballpark's not in the best area. I love walking around Princeton, and you get the smell of the Ivy League, both literally and figuratively. So just two examples. And as it turns out, both New York teams, the Mets and the Yankees, in those two respective cities.
Ah, that's great. Here in Lansing, we've got Paramount Coffee across the street. It reminds me of Jacksonville, Florida, which I felt absolutely reeked of coffee. It was your wake-up call every morning. In Clinton, Iowa, there was, thankfully, the aroma isn't as strong anymore, but you had the sewage treatment facility, the paper mill, and the dog food factory, which would all combine into a special aroma whenever you'd visit.
And I hope they're not sharing the pipes, because the dog food factory and the waste treatment plant, if those lines get crossed, you might just not know.
All right, let's talk specifically about individual players. Hey, how hot has Forrest Wall been?
Absolutely scalding. I went to give him a fist bump yesterday, and I came away with a second-degree burn. The kid has been fantastic, and it's a shame that none of you guys lower in the system had an opportunity to see Forrest Wall do his thing for your team, because he's a guy who, in the course of a 9-inning game, you're not necessarily going to look out on the field and see him out there in center or at the dish and be like, wow, this is a guy who is going to make a huge impact day in and day out. But he just consistently shows up, puts good plate appearances or at-bats together, gets on base, works deep into counts, but isn't afraid to hack early in the count as well. And it just goes to show that he's raised his average north of 300 for the first time this season over his recent 11-game stretch, which is the longest active hitting streak in the Eastern League right now. And if you extrapolate that back even further, he's had a hit 28 of his last 33 and reached base in 30 of those 33 games. So to be able to have manager Mike Mordecai pencil in that kind of talent at the top of his order every single night, and there's Forrest at the top tonight here in Altoona, that has been a huge boon to the Fisher Cats and to Forrest Wall.
The other guy who caught my eye with his performance, and I talked with about him with Jim Tarabocchia because he was with Dunedin earlier this year. Hey, how good has Riley Adams been?
I'll tell you, Riley Adams for me, Jesse, has been probably the most fun to watch this season. And yes, it's been a relatively small sample size, though tonight will be his 22nd game with the Cats. He only played 19 down in Dunedin, so now you can say he's been a Fisher Cat longer than he's been a DJ. Yesterday, three base hits, including a double. It seems like he's standing on second base after his at-bat at least once every game. And for him to step up in certain situations, whether he's batting fourth like he is tonight or batting sixth, he finds ways to make an impact both at the plate and behind the dish. He, I would argue, is quickly rocketing up the ranks as one of the favored receivers for all of the pitchers on this pitching staff. And although he didn't start behind the dish for Nate Pearson yesterday, those two guys have a special connection as well. So obviously Riley can do it on his own at the dish, but I love the way he's been working with this staff as well. And of course, all these guys know each other from the complex or spending seasons fast with one another, but you come up from a team at a lower level and are now expected to shoulder the mantle, if you will, to handle this pitching staff. And I think Riley Adams has done an excellent job through his first 3 weeks here.
Speaking with Tyler Zickel about the Class AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats, Tyler, anybody else that you would like to show some love to for their performance of this past week?
Got to be Nash Knight. He's in the midst of a personal best 7-game hitting streak, had a couple of extra base hits yesterday, including a triple. And really, you take a look at his stats, and although Nash, again, kind of like Jacob Wagespeck, as Pat was alluding to, a guy who signed as a minor league free agent out of college at Dallas Baptist, began his pro career in 2015, was known at the end of last season for playing all 9 positions down in Advanced A Dunedin, and after a slow start in April in which he batted south of 200, since the calendar has turned to May, Nash has arguably been our best hitter in 17 games, batting .352 straight off of his MILB.com player page. And not only is he a guy who can hit from both sides of the plate, but you can put him at any position, obviously, as we know from the all 9 position experience, but he can play a great third base, put him at first. He can play the middle infielder at infield positions as needed. And of course, he'll haul in some fly balls in the corner outfield spots as well. So to have a utility man like that, batting north of .250 on the year in the midst of his best stretch of the season and batting third tonight. Let me see if he's batted third at all this season. In fact, this is just his 4th game batting third. So it'll be nice to see Nash Knight do his thing in the 3-hole as arguably New Hampshire's most consistent hitter along with Forrest Wall and Riley Adams of late.
About New Hampshire's pitchers, Nate Pearson has taken unusually his lumps as of late. Same thing with Patrick Murphy. How are those two pitchers using those experiences to become more complete pitchers?
Indeed. Well, yesterday, Nate Pearson got his first decision, and unfortunately, it was a loss since coming up from Advanced A Dunedin, where he began the year with a sub-1 ERA. Nate is a guy who we know is going to, if all things continue to go as they've gone, pitch in the big league sooner rather than later. But there are going to be days where you don't have your best stuff or maybe aren't able to locate as well as you normally can. And that was kind of a day yesterday for Nate Pearson, but a moment that stuck out to me was in the first after he allowed the first 3 batters to reach, a couple of singles, neither of which were hit hard, and then a walk after he battled with Austin Davidson of the Senators. A pass ball ended up bringing home a run, but with the bases loaded and nobody out, he ended up allowing just that one run. He struck out 2 of his next 3 and retired the next 3 batters in a row. So for me, at 22 years old, Nate Pearson becomes a better pitcher for that experience yesterday as opposed to pitching 5 shutouts and recording 5 strikeouts and only allowing 2 hits as he's done in turns past. So for him to be able to work out of those sticky situations with runners on base, he only had 1 perfect inning yesterday. That was in the 4th, but or rather the 3rd. But for him to be able to work around these situations with runners on base and find ways to get outs, even if he's not feeling his best or looking his best that day, or for that matter, Harrisburg being the best team in our league, they just put together good at-bats. And so they got to Pearson a little bit yesterday, but he ground through 4 2/3. And I think he comes away from yesterday's game a better pitcher than he would have been if the outing had been a little more smooth. And the same is true for Patrick Murphy. I didn't envy his circumstances when we arrived in Harrisburg at about 3:30 a.m. a couple of days ago to start that series at FNB Field. He did all he could to get through 4 2/3. He gave up a season-high 7 runs on 7 hits. But with limited sleep and pitching after a delayed start in less than ideal condition, again, it's not going to be all roses in the big leagues every day. So for Pat Murphy to deal with a little bit of that, those obstacles, if you will, certainly going to make him a better pitcher in the long run. Because, Jesse, let's be honest, you and I and everybody else listening and talking on this Around the Nest knows that Patrick Murphy and Nate Pearson have big league quality stuff. Now it's just a matter of putting together the consistency and the mentality to be that big league pitcher we know they can all be.
Honesty is the best policy. Lastly, with Tyler Zickel, Pedro Martinez's favorite Fisher cat going to the mound tonight, Jency Diaz. What do you expect out of Jency?
Well, he got the loss in his last start, and that was only because Hartford, who has seen us so many times this year, had also seen Jency a heck of a lot as well. And for him, he had, going into his last start, had pitched back-to-back seven-inning shutouts. One of them was a complete game in a doubleheader. The other was a quality start. And he established the highest single-man scoreless inning streak of the season for a Fisher Cats pitcher, 18 2/3 scoreless innings as a starter, no less, from May 27th to May 26th. Just says a lot about his ability when things are clicking on all cylinders. And I'm looking forward to him taking the ball tonight, going to attack these Altoona batters and have an opportunity to recreate some of the same success he had against the same curve club just about 10 days ago back in Manchester when he worked his second of those 2-7 shutout innings against this Altoona team. So if Yancey can find that similar groove, I'm looking forward to 7 or maybe even 8 tonight. Patrick Murphy went 8 one time this year. No other starter has gone past 7. Could Diaz be the guy tonight? He would get my vote for sure.
All right, Tyler Zickel, the Zick, joining us from Altoona Curve, Pennsylvania, where he's got the New Hampshire Fisher Cats against the Altoona Curve this weekend. Zick, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Jesse. Thanks for having me roost in the nest for a little bit. Go Cats. Let's sweep them here in Curve, PA this weekend.
Here we go. At Tyler_Zickel, you can find him on Twitter. And now let's wrap up the show with a conversation, as promised. Adam Jaxa sat down with the newest Lansing Lugnut, Griffin Conine, and here was that conversation.
Adam Jaxa here for Lansing Lugnuts Baseball. Now joining us, outfielder Griffin Conine. Your first day being a Lansing Lugnut, take us through the travel process and when you got here as you get ready for the first game.
Yeah, I just got in last night, kind of late, around 10. Left at like 5, got to play one last game down there in Dunedin, just to, you know, get a couple last minute at bats, make sure I was right where I wanted to be before I headed up here. So they were really great about letting me hop in the game for a couple at bats. Only actually ended up taking one and had the swing I wanted to have on that at bat. So I just kind of got my stuff together and headed to the airport after that.
When did they tell you that game 51 you were going to head up and be a Lansing Lugnut?
It was about 2 weeks ago, so it's pretty late. You know, I was kind of, the mindset for me was just wherever I go is where I go. You know, it wasn't nothing I could control, and it wasn't something I wanted to focus on. But obviously, when I heard I was coming up here, I was really excited. You know, a lot of the guys I play with in Vancouver are here now, and seems like they got a really good group of guys. And obviously, Lansing is an awesome place to play, environment-wise. So definitely good to get out of the Florida heat too.
No doubt about that. We bring you to Dayton, where there is some heat, 87 degrees last night, but maybe a little bit cooler. Anything in specific that you are working on to try and get better and during your time in extended spring training coming into the year?
Yeah, absolutely. The mindset going into it was, you know, I was going to have, you know, this set amount of time there, which is, you know, I knew it was about 2 months, so wanted to work out any kinks in my swing I could, mechanical issues. You know, I felt coming out of last year, there was definitely some holes in my swing that I wanted to work through and just get my swing in the best possible spot I could when I came up here. So a lot of that was attacking fastballs, making sure I'm always on time for the fastball and kind of working off that. So the last 2 weeks of it extended, really everything came together, and I feel as good as I felt.
Let's go back to when you started growing up. Obviously, a unique situation with your dad being a Major League Baseball player. What was that like growing up and watching him play and potentially seeing him travel all around?
Yeah, it was really cool. Something that you don't realize how cool it is until later in your life when people tell you that, you know, my dad was a lawyer, you know, a lot more of a normal job. So I don't think I realized it till he retired when I was 10 years old. So I was still pretty young, but definitely remember a lot of good times at the old Marlins Stadium in Florida. Still have some hazy memories of the World Series in 2003. And then we spent some time in Cincinnati when he was at the Reds. So a lot of good memories. Met a lot of cool people, and it was really fun.
Specifically with the game of baseball, Griffin, what has your dad taught you?
Anything can be accomplished with hard work. He was a guy that he was a pitcher in college and got drafted in the 58th round as a hitter, and kind of had to start from scratch and just work his way up. You know, and that's the only reason he got to where he did, and how he could stay in the league so long was just working hard and putting in the time and just knowing that every day is a battle, and you gotta just kind of take what you can learn from each day and take it to the next day and get better.
Has he or anybody that watched him that has now watched you said you look a little bit like him when you're playing the game?
That's one thing. I don't think anyone's ever said that. we're pretty polar opposites, you know. Opposite sides of the plate, that's an obvious one. But approach-wise, swing-wise, you know, he was more of like a had the 214 homer, so I can't knock the power too much. But he was more of like a contact hitter, and I'm kind of more the power guy that, wants to hit the long ball, and definitely a lot can be learned from his approach, and I try to take it into mine because he was so good at seeing pitches deep and being able to hit every type of pitch. You know, he didn't really have a hole in his swing like I was trying to work through and extend it. So, I think definitely different players, but similar approaches.
Talking with Griffin Conine, I read somewhere that you were a big skateboarder back when you were a younger kid, and you didn't really get into baseball until sophomore, junior year. How did you get into skateboarding?
I think it was just my buddy in middle school. In like sixth or seventh grade, just someone I became friends with. It was just like the average rebellious phase of my life where baseball seemed boring at the time and was the furthest thing from my mind. And it was just, it was just a fun little phase. It was, about sixth to eighth grade probably, or sixth to ninth grade maybe, where I was just, that was all I'd think about. And that's all I would eat, sleep, breathe skateboarding, kind of like I do baseball now. And it was just, I don't know, maybe it was just a time where I needed to kind of get away from it just so I could realize that I wanted it and that I needed it. So it was really fun. But, once I got hurt actually playing football and then couldn't skateboard for a while. And then after that, I never picked it up again and just started getting really into baseball.
When was the last time you hopped on a skateboard? Do you still have one around?
Yeah, actually, at Duke, I got like one of a mini longboard, so I wasn't ripping the stair jumps as much as I used to, trying to stay safe, but definitely like to ride it around still.
Okay, so then you're trying to decide on a college. Duke, Wake Forest, or Rice, I believe, were in your final three. Why was Duke the right fit for you?
Just best of everything, best academic school of the three. Best baseball-wise at the time, I really thought that I believed what Coach Pollard, what he said on my visit, and how much conviction he had about turning the program around. And obviously before that, Wake was probably the better baseball team, but I really believe that Coach Pollard was bringing the team in the right direction. And just once I got on campus in North Carolina, and just you couldn't beat it. So. Just everything combined, ACC, academics, my parents really wanted me to go to a good school, and I did too, so just it was the best of everything.
We have an idea of what it's like to be a Duke basketball player under Coach K. What's it like to be a Duke baseball player?
A lot less glamorous, I have had people come up to me and state that they didn't know we had a baseball team at the university, but it was pretty cool seeing freshman year to junior year, just like how different we were regarded on campus, just because all that we accomplished in my junior year, and you know, broke the record for the most school wins, and it was really awesome to see Coach Pollard kind of get the recognition that he worked really hard for, and that we all did. So definitely a big change from freshman to junior year.
We're talking with Griffin Conine on his first day with the Lansing Lugnuts a couple years ago. Last year, actually, in 2018, you hit the longest home run of the college baseball season, 497 feet. Can you take us through it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was right after finals. We were playing Gardner-Webb in a doubleheader, and it was just the guy on the mound was just like a straight-throwing righty, and kind of he was missing up a lot and just throwing up, so I just got up there, and I was like, I'm going to look for a fastball, kind of like belt stomach high, and first pitch I think it was just 85 middle right down the middle, and yeah, I swung first pitch and just one of the hardest balls I ever hit in my life, and I got in the dugout, and then everyone was freaking out because like our media team like started tweeting like home run distances like during the game, like they would do it right after because they would check the track man, and someone tweeted and they were like 497, and I was like no, like I thought they were messing with me, and then they were like no, seriously. So it was crazy. I did not think I went that far. That was by far the farthest ball I ever hit.
You get drafted by the Blue Jays in the second round. Initial thoughts when you found out or when you got the phone call, what you thought about being a Toronto Blue Jay?
Excitement. You know, I was really excited. People always ask me if I had any idea, if I was, you know, if I knew the Blue Jays would take me, if I knew anyone that was like a front runner, and I really had none. My agent didn't either. He was kind of like, it could be any one of 10 different teams. He just texted me the pick right before and just said the word Jays. That was all I heard from him. And then you know we were actually at the regional in Athens, Georgia after we just went to a super. So the whole team was there that night. We were watching on TV and there was no team that people asked if I had a team I wanted to go to. I didn't really. You know, just a good organization, a good fan base, big city. You know, all the things that Toronto obviously has and. Really cool to be a part of a team that, you know, a whole country is really behind.
We're talking with Griffin Conine with the Vancouver Canadiens last year. And then after the season, you faced some adversity, found out you'd have a 50-game suspension before this year got underway for you. Take us through when you found out in November and how you handled all of that.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely the most devastating phone call I've ever got. You know, it was just a situation where right away I just was already thinking about this day, really just about how all I could do to get myself to the best point to play when the suspension ended, and I think I've done that. And you know, it was the first 2 months were really hard. Definitely, you know, everyone releasing the statement was really hard, just because owning up to your mistakes is never easy, and it was something that I had to do. You know, I didn't want to take the path where people kind of brush it off or they say there was other reasons or excuses they could make. I didn't want to be that guy. So it was just a situation where I used it as motivation. You know, it was a mistake I made, and that's something I drew from a lot in the off season when I was, you know, a workout was really tough, and I didn't want to keep going or you know, whenever I was going out to the field to work, it was just something that I could kind of get motivation from and work harder.
How tough was it to, you know, see your name in articles or newspapers or wherever and see the suspension next to your name, knowing that you just want to get back out and play and show who you are?
Yeah, it wasn't easy, and thank God, you know, I have all the support I had, and you know, my family, and I was at Duke when I found out, and for the off season, and you know, I had that talk with the coaching staff because obviously I wanted them to hear from me, and that wasn't easy in itself, but at the same time, all they did for me and letting me continue to do all my work there and get my workouts in there was unbelievable. And the biggest thing I think was just getting off Twitter, getting off social media for at least a few months. You know, I knew nothing on there was something I would really want to see. You know, people are ignorant and people say things that you can't control. So I knew who I was and knew that I didn't really need to see anything that wasn't going to help me mentally.
Feels like that helped you grow up a little bit and just learn something from what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was the hardest thing I ever faced, you know, having that kind of negative spotlight on me. I always love, you know, who doesn't like the spotlight, but that never had that kind. So it was easy. It wasn't easy, but it was something that I look back and, you know, I think I'm definitely better because of it. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of the reasons that I went to extended and worked there, I think, is important in my career going forward.
And last question for you. You come up to Lansing, as you mentioned. You played in Vancouver with a lot of the guys that are here on this team now. Who are you most excited to see again and play again with, knowing that, again, you had the opportunity to share some memories with some of these guys last year?
Yeah. A lot of the guys. You know, I mean, Kerwer was played outfield with him all last year. That kid's a clown, and hated to see him go into the wall like that last night. But hopefully he's going to be okay so we can get back out there together. And all my teammates out there from Vancouver. There's a lot of them up here, so I don't want to list them all off. Don't want to leave anyone out. But we had a great chemistry up there in Vancouver, so looking to keep that going.
All right, Griffin Conine, thanks so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you in a Lansing Lugnut uniform tonight. Good luck.
Thank you.
So that was Adam Jaxo speaking with Griffin Conine. Conine, before his very first game with the Lansing Lugnuts, now he's played two games with the Lugnuts, that very first game an RBI single in the third at-bat, breaking a 0-0 tie. And then his second game, he struck out his first time up. He doubled to left center. He doubled down the left field line. He homered to left. He homered to left. We're eager to see what the future holds for Conine in Lansing and beyond. That does it for another week of Around the Nest. For Adam Jackson in Lansing, Jim Tarabocchia in Dunedin, Tyler Zickel in New Hampshire, and Pat Malacaro in Buffalo, I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strasser with the Lansing Lugnuts. Big thanks as well to Griffin Conine as our guest this week, to Hayden Godfrey for posting on Bluebird Banter, and to the minor leaguer as well as Bluebird Banter overall. Find us on Twitter @AroundNest. Until next week, enjoy the baseball.